Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another Sabbath day here. Certainly nice to see everyone come back together this week. A little bit of a chilly one coming around. We had our youth activity last Sabbath evening afterwards. All the team members went out rock climbing, and that was quite an experience. That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that. I think the kids really, the youth all enjoyed that as well. It's quite the thing sometimes when you figuratively say, your life is in my hands. Well, when you're rock climbing, it's no joke. You see these kids, and they're 40 feet off the ground, and another kid's life is, they're in their hands. But it was a lot of fun. Hopefully, we get to do more stuff with the team. It's a great group of youth that we have out here. Well, today we're going to try something a little different, and I don't know if you've ever had those nightmares. People who've spoken and such. You know how you get up to the podium and you get up here, and you have absolutely no notes. I'm like, what was I thinking? Well, I'm here without notes today, so. This is a bit of a stretch for me, and okay, let's hope we get through this one. So we're going to try doing a little bit of visual aids along with this. Today I'm going to talk about the Sabbath, and specifically about the Sabbath. How did the Sabbath become, from what was very clearly in the day of Christ, the day of worship of God, how did it become Sunday? How did that historically happen? I thought I'd start out with some good gratuitous pictures. This is at the feast in Hawaii, the beginning of the festival this year, the first day of the feast, and we're taking pictures of the sunset, because, of course, with the sunset starts the Sabbath, and I had to take one of my father here and gratuitously put this in, because, of course, he's not pointed at the sunset, but, we won't go there too much, but, okay, there was good pictures as well. This was taken off our balcony at the feast, and may never get anywhere as nice, so I've got to remember this, and well, I'm sure we're not here for my gratuitous family slideshow, so we'll move on. The Sabbath. The Sabbath now is something we all keep and observe. And as I say, what we're looking at today is the Sabbath was transformed into Sunday. How did this happen? When did this happen? We know the Sabbath is a day of rest. It's a day that we stop, we cease working as the scriptures command us, and we observe the Sabbath in many different ways. It's also a day of worship where we come together as well here and we worship God, we give praise to God, we study and learn. But the world out there has a different view. When the world, I mean the popular Christian world, they look at the Sabbath as a celebration. It's an hour of worship, not a day of worship. And it's a celebration, an hour of worship is something a little bit different, actually a lot different in many ways than what we do ourselves. Well, is the Sabbath important? The prophet Ezekiel, I think, had a lot to say about the Sabbath. He said in Ezekiel 22, verse 8, God speaking, Ezekiel's words written down, "You have despised my holy things and profaned my Sabbaths." Certainly, there's many scriptures where God has expressed his exasperation, his anger with people for not observing the Sabbath appropriately, for not keeping the Sabbath. Well, today, I don't want to go into a subject to say, why do we keep the Sabbath? What are the reasons behind keeping the Sabbath? And I believe we are here because we love God's Sabbath day. We understand that there's a reason to keep it. We have those reasons strongly in our hearts. But today I want to talk about how did the Sabbath get replaced? And one specific angle of this is, how did this Sabbath move to Sunday? Well, there's two theories in the world. The oldest view, the ancient view, is that the Sabbath was replaced. It was a whole new creation. The second view is more from the Reformation. And the Reformation view is that the Sabbath was transformed. The difference between replaced is like when you take something and you throw it out and you put something brand new in. Whereas transferred is you take something and move it to a different place. Those are the two main theories out in the world as to why that Sabbath was changed to Sunday. Well, let's look first at the ancient Catholic view. When we look at the Catholic view, best place to start there I found was with what is considered the greatest historian of the Roman Catholic Church. Thomas Aquinas lived in the 13th century and around 1260 AD, one of the most popularly recognized theologians. He had a thing to say about the Sabbath. He said very clearly, the observance of the Lord's Day took the place of the observance of the Sabbath, not by virtue of the biblical precept, but by the institution of the church. He was very clear in saying that we are not keeping the Sabbath because the Bible told us to. It's the church's rule. The Catholic view says that the Sabbath was a temporary Mosaic institution given to the Jews, but it was abrogated by Christ, and consequently it is no longer binding today. The Christians celebrated Sunday as a brand new day. It was a new institution established by the church to celebrate Christ's return. Again, this is the replacement theory. Sunday was something new. And it is interesting when you look at the slide in the lower right corner, the arms of the Catholic Church. That's not battle axes they have behind the shield. Those are keys. And they believe very strongly in the scripture that Peter was given the keys to the kingdom of heaven. And he has the right to decide things. He has the right to decide, we're keeping Sunday. Church has the authority. We can do it. It's something that's very strong in the Catholic theology. And they use this to justify their conversion to Sunday. Well, let's look at the Reformation view, or the Protestant view, as is popular in many churches, but not all Protestants today. Protestants appeal to the moral imperative of the Sabbath commandment. They said, no, the Sabbath commandment is still binding for us today. There is a commanded day that we are to worship God and to rest. They also believe that many people today celebrate Sunday as a continuation of the Sabbath. It is a day of rest and worship. It's a whole day. I had one friend, I think I've mentioned before, who I worked with, and he was with a Christian Reformed Church in Canada, which is a Calvinist background church. And he very clearly keeps Sundays in the same way, perhaps, that we observe the Sabbath. He doesn't work, doesn't watch television, takes the whole day off. I'm not sure if it was Sabbath with even to even or midnight to midnight, but many, through the course of American history and Canadian history, did follow this particular view. I have a picture of John Calvin in the bottom, because John Calvin was the one who really came out and said, and it came around the same time the Bible was publicly distributed, that we should be following the words of the Scripture. And the Scripture is very clear that we should be keeping the Sabbath day. However, he believes it was moved, it was transferred from Saturday to Sunday. Theologians agree, whether one theory or the other theory, they do agree that Jesus Christ started the movement to Sunday. So whether you believe it was transferred or whether you believe it was a whole new creation, they agree Jesus started this. Basically, they're saying that Jesus was the provocateur. He was provoking the people of his day into eventually not keeping a Sabbath. I have a quote here I wrote down from, must be 12, 13 years ago, from Dr. David Albert, who was one of the presenters on the World Tomorrow program, a former Sabbatarian keeping church. But he came out and said, Jesus provocatively acted against Sabbath traditions. He laid the groundwork for the termination of the Sabbath. And this was a very popular view, that Jesus was always in the face of the Pharisees, sort of undercutting the Sabbath day. And many people who have left the Sabbath, this is what they believe. Well, in reality, Christ's controversial Sabbath activities, they were for a reason, to clarify, not to nullify. Whenever Jesus was confronted about the Sabbath, he always took the tack that he was going to clarify what the Sabbath was about and what its true meaning was. Well, Jesus is a teacher, and I think we should look at him in that light. That's a more accurate light. Jesus, the teacher, when he was accused of Sabbath breaking, he always refuted the charges. He always stood up. And he would say, and typically as in Matthew 12, 3-5 that I quoted here, he would say, haven't you read the scriptures? Da-da-da-da-da. He always went back to the core, to the truth, to help people to understand. Jesus taught about the Sabbath and to say that the Sabbath was a day to do good. That's in Matthew chapter 12, verse 12. He was very clear. The Sabbath is a day to do good. He also clarified the Sabbath is a day to do good deeds. And when he did healing, he said it's a day to save life. And that's found in Mark chapter 3 and verse 4. He also, Jesus the teacher, said that the Sabbath is a day to be healed and loosed from physical and spiritual bonds. He was very clear. And that was, again, in the example where he freed someone from demon possession on the day, and they accused him of breaking the Sabbath. He said, no, I'm going to clarify and teach you what the Sabbath's really about. The Sabbath is about mercy over religiosity. Quite often we will get technical about Sabbath keeping, and the Pharisees were often in that way. They get very finicky, and he said, no, that's not the point of the Sabbath. It's about mercy. And that also is in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 7. Well, Jesus, as a teacher, he obviously clarified the divine intent of the Sabbath. I think it's important to go over this to understand that Jesus did not provoke the Sadducees or did provoke the Jewish people of the day against the Sabbath. He was a teacher clarifying the divine intent of the day. Well, Catholics and Protestants agree on one thing. They agree that the Sabbath was changed to Sunday by the Apostolic Church to memorialize his resurrection. So you ask people out there who keep Sunday and say, well, why do you keep Sunday and not the Sabbath? And their response is going to be, well, we have Sunday morning church because we're celebrating his resurrection. We're memorializing his resurrection every week. Isn't that a good thing to do? Well, they believe that was brought about by the apostolic church in the first century. Well, truth be told, let's start looking at that. Did the apostolic church, the beginning church, actually start that? Well, there was no command of Christ or the apostles to observe the Sabbath, to observe Sunday, faux pas. There was no commands or even suggestions for Sunday keeping throughout the scriptures. Many other commands were there. You know, there was a command about getting baptized. That was important. There was commands about foot washing. You remember this. Do this in remembrance of me. We heard that about several things. There was a command for him to his disciples to preach the gospel. But there was never a command to stop keeping the Sabbath and start keeping Sunday. Secondly, the reason why they didn't is no attempts to memorialize his resurrection. Usually when Christ starts something, like he did with the foot washing, he said, okay, do this in remembrance of me. He's saying, I want a memorial of this particular event, of this occasion. Well, there's no such divine act to start a new institution. We actually look at the scriptures and it's a little hazy. Was Christ resurrected while it was still dark? Was he resurrected after light? Was he resurrected right at dawn? Was he resurrected the night before? Scriptures are hazy. There's no clear act that says, start something new here, start a memorial here. In fact, what did Christ say when he ran into people after his resurrection? He says, go, tell my brethren to go to Galilee. You know, one of his, there's a command to get up and go and make a long journey. There was no effort for a memorialization. Again, that's in Matthew chapter 28, verse 10. So he was telling them, okay, guys, time to go to work, not stop and memorialize. So another reason that the church didn't move it to Sunday. Sunday was never called the day of the resurrection. It was always called the first day of the week. Never was it called day of the resurrection. That's throughout the New Testament scriptures. The phrase, the first day of the week, or the day of resurrection, that day of resurrection phrase doesn't appear until the fourth century, 300 years after the Messiah's death. So it came much, much later. Four, the resurrection presupposes work. The resurrection marks the beginning of ministry by his followers. As I said, with Jesus' first command, his command was, go to Galilee. And eventually he commanded his people to go start working. It was a start of our responsibility. Five, the Lord's Supper was not celebrated on Sunday. There are many churches out there, many other Christian churches, Sunday-keeping churches, who say that the Lord's Supper is a special event that was done every Sunday. And they have a fundamental theology on that. The Protestants often equate the Lord's Supper with the resurrection. However, the Apostle Paul, when you look at the Lord's Supper, it in no way hints that this is something that occurs on Sunday. There was not a fixed day. You know, he even said himself, you know, when you take the Lord's Supper. He never said, on Sunday, when you take the Lord's Supper. Of course, with our other understanding of the holy days, we know what that all means. Six, the Lord's Supper commemorates Jesus' sacrifice, not his resurrection. The actual, if you look at the foot washing ceremony and the taking of the Passover, we understand this very clearly. But many other Christians, you know, those who claim to follow Christ in the world, don't understand that it symbolizes his sacrifice and ultimately his second coming. Easter, you know, the whole concept of a Sunday morning service, sunrise service, was unheard of by the apostolic church. In the first century, no record of it anywhere in the Bible or any other readings outside the Bible. So our historical early documents, the seventh reason, they ignore the resurrection for Sunday. Well, other Christians, you know, whether they were true Christians or, you know, those perhaps who were falling away, many people wrote about Christianity in the first few centuries. Justin Martyr, around 150 AD, someone who was martyred for his beliefs in Christ, he kept Sunday, and he said that Sunday was there to celebrate the inauguration of creation. He said, just as God started to create the world, Sunday is just representative of the beginning of creation. Another person, Barnabas, a little bit earlier, around AD 135, wrote that the eighth day reflected the world to come. Again, another twisting of perhaps things we understand now, but the eighth day was the start of the new millennium. Not the new millennium, God's kingdom, you know, what's represented by the eighth holy day, you know, God's kingdom coming here on earth. They thought, well, let's do that for Sunday as well, and then we can do that every week. Again, not at all was it celebrating his resurrection. And that's what these 7 points were to try and show, that nowhere in the Bible does the New Testament church, the apostolic church, have record of that particular belief. So where did Sunday keeping originate? Did it originate in Jerusalem? Of course, Jerusalem is a city that we all look forward to living in one day. We know there is a new kingdom coming here. This particular photo is of the old Jerusalem today, the city of David at night. But one of the presuppositions, or one of the big pushes by those who keep Sunday, say, well, it started at the Jerusalem church. Jerusalem church had that moral authority. That's where the apostles came out of. So did they start keeping Sunday? Well, this is, again, a popular view of the Sunday keepers, that the Jerusalem church pioneered the keeping of Sunday instead of the Sabbath. Pioneered Sunday keeping. Okay, are we going to buy that? Well, no, that's what we're here for, to try and remind ourselves of why we don't believe that the Jerusalem church pioneered Sunday keeping. This claim is based on three significant faulty assumptions. Well, first of all, the first assumption, faulty assumption, is that Christ arose there. Well, yes, Christ might have arisen there, and that gave the Jerusalem church a lot of authority, but nonetheless, there was no immediate break from the Jewish people. You know, the Jews still celebrated the Sabbath, and they continued to celebrate the Sabbath afterwards. There was no break. The Jerusalem church, later in the book of Acts, was described as being zealous for the law. Now, if we look at the Torah, you know, as law, and if they were zealous for the Torah, you know, all of God's teachings and instructions, and those teachings included the Sabbath day and the holy days and all the other things, and they were zealous for it, how could they possibly start Sunday keeping there? A second reason why the Jerusalem church didn't start Sunday keeping, or a faulty assumption about the Jerusalem church starting it, it's believed that Paul learned it there. Paul learned Sunday keeping from the church at Jerusalem. There's holes in that. The Jews, if you look at the one passage over circumcision, where they criticized Paul in Acts chapter 21, verse 21. They, to use the vernacular, they flipped out over circumcision. They said he had abandoned Moses. You know, how could you do such a thing? If the Sabbath was also abandoned to the Jewish people, that was an incredibly important thing to them. They had read Ezekiel as well, and they were going to not be the ones who abandoned his Sabbath. They were fanatical about it. No mention at all of that against Paul. Faulty assumption three is only the headquarters church could do this. Well, if Christianity around the world moved to Sunday keeping, Jerusalem had to have started this. Well, again, they assumed that only Jerusalem commanded sufficient respect and authority to change the day from Saturday to Sunday. And Jerusalem, you know, ironically, but yes, Jerusalem was the most Jewish of all Christian churches. So if they had the moral authority, well, is that completely true? Is that that's an assumption that's made? And that Jerusalem was so Jewish that, yes, moving away from the Sabbath was, again, extremely unlikely. So the question comes, okay, that's pretty tough to justify. And most scholars today, they give up. They looked at the scriptures and they can say, yeah, you know by reading the biblical scriptures, and there's a few out there, and I think many of our former association thought they found scriptures to say abandon the Sabbath. But most scholars say, we agree it's not in the scriptures, it's not in the Bible. Certainly the Catholic Church believes that. Very strongly, they say there's nothing in the Bible that says move the Sabbath to Sunday or replace the Sabbath with Sunday. They say it was their authority. But most scholars agree. So the Jerusalem church began Sunday observance after 70 AD. Okay, you got us on the one, but the Bible ends around 70 AD. There's not much written after that, especially about these topics. So it must have been after 70 AD that the Jerusalem church moved to Sunday keeping. And the idea here, of course, is that in 70 AD, when Titus, you know, leveled Jerusalem, when he attacked Jerusalem and the Christians fled to Pella, that when they left, they separated from the Jews and they started keeping Sunday. That's the event that happened around 70 AD. So let's look at the Pella church, the church that fled Jerusalem around that particular time. The Jerusalem church fled to Pella after the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70. Palestinian Christians became known as the Nazarenes, and not surprisingly, and this label persisted for centuries. So if the Jerusalem church in Pella and in Greater Palestine was known as the Nazarenes, well, guess what? There are documents out there that talk about the Nazarenes in the Holy Land and about this particular church. And again, a lot of this presentation, I should have said this up front, is coming almost as a book review of Dr. Samuel Bakayoko's theory, or his doctorate dissertation on Sabbath to Sunday. I should have said that up front. I have that at the end as well. Most of us are very familiar with this because I think we bought in bulk his book, you know, 12, 13 years ago. When Tony Wazelkoff was here, we bought 40 or 50 copies. So a lot of this we know, and it's a bit of a book review, but after 10 years, I forget an awful lot. So yes, there's one particular document that he found in the Vatican archives when he was studying for his doctorate. And the Palestinian historian Epiphanius, around 350 AD, wrote about the Nazarenes. And he wrote many things about the Nazarene church in Greater Israel. And one of his quotes was, "The Nazarenes insisted and persisted in the observance of Sabbath keeping." This is a very important quote. "The Nazarenes," which is the Jerusalem church, "insisted and persisted in the observance of Sabbath keeping." There's one of Dr. Bakayoki's professors who wrote this particular, said this comment that he wrote in his book. And he said, "This is the death blow to the theory that makes Jerusalem the birthplace of Sunday keeping." That was by the Jesuit professor Vincenzo Monacino. Well, very decisive statement that we can take comfort in, that yes, we know we're doing the right thing. We know the Jerusalem church didn't move to Sunday keeping from Sabbath keeping. We have documentation to back that up. Unfortunately, nonetheless, in the world, not everyone's going to accept that. That's something we just have to live with. Even when we have evidence, not always is it. Drum roll. Okay, that was a little loud there. Where did Sunday keeping originate? Rome. We're going to tag the Romans. No, there's nothing good going on in Italy now. The Canadian hockey team lost to the Swiss today. The men's hockey team lost to Switzerland. And then I heard the curling team lost to Italy. So we can really pile on to Rome today. We can pile on to Italy. Nothing's good going on there. Why Rome? Sorry to wake you up there, too. Why Rome? Well, first of all, Rome had predominantly Gentile converts, those who perhaps were not as grounded in the Torah as the Jerusalem church. Romans 11, verse 13, Paul says when addressing the Romans, he says, "I'm speaking to you Gentiles." There was a significant Gentile population in Rome who were in Christianity. Reason two why it came from Rome. There was an early differentiation from the Jews. Nero, if you recall when Rome burned, Nero condemned Christians for burning Rome, but not the Jews. The Jewish part of Rome, when Rome burned down, the Jewish sections didn't burn down. They were left intact. So you would think that, okay, I'm going to blame the Jews right along with the Christians. They're all one sect. In the Holy Land, they were still somewhat together. But in Rome, the Christians were out of the Jewish synagogue by that time. And even in that literature, there was a difference between the Jews and the Christians. It was a significant difference in that they weren't lumped together. The preeminence of the Church of Rome. That was another reason. Nero condemned Christians for burning Rome, but not the Jews. I think I've been there before. Number four, anti-Jewish propaganda. The Jews were reviled racially and culturally by the Romans. The Jewish people were not held up to a high pedestal. They had weird rituals. They had unusual habits, something that was extremely foreign to the Romans. The Jews were reviled racially and culturally by the Romans. And secondly, Sabbath keeping was derided as an example of Jewish laziness. There's lots of literature, Roman literature, that talks about the laziness of Jews. You know, anti-Semitism isn't anything new there.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
When you are the two Jewish most wanted people in history. Yeah, my 10-year-old said, "You're never going to let you give a sermon again after this." See why. There's two men that the Jewish people particularly single out. And I got this from Will Durant, a famous historian who wrote much about history. And he talked about what two men, if you were to think, who almost did the worst things to the Jewish people, almost wiped them out as a people. Number one will go contemporary. I think we would all have a good idea of who that is. Adolf Hitler. Hated by Jews because he tried to wipe out the Jewish nation. He tried to kill them individually. Well, who's the second most derided person, the most hated person by the Jewish people? You know, who's at the top of the most wanted? You could say Nebuchadnezzar. You know, hey, he destroyed the original temple, took Jews off into captivity. Maybe some bullets for Antiochus Epiphanes. You know, he profaned the temple and he was very hard on the Jews. And you can go back to the book of Esther, there's Haman. Although the Jews kind of say, hey, you know, God worked on our side with that one. You could look at Titus, who destroyed the temple in 70 AD. The person, though, that the Jewish people most reviled is the Emperor Hadrian. Why the Emperor Hadrian? Well, it's a good reason. If you look at the events in Judah, as I said, around 70 AD, the temple was destroyed. But nonetheless, it did not lead to the end of Jews in Judea. Many were killed. Many millions were killed, but there were still many millions left in Israel. And there were Jews who were left in Jerusalem even after the temple was destroyed. So there was still a Jewish nation at that time. The Emperor Hadrian declared his intent to raise a shrine to Jupiter in the old temple. This is around 130 AD. He felt that the Jews, they were still troublesome, they were still rebelling, they were looking for their Messiah. And ultimately the Jewish people, the Pharisees and teachers, they rallied around a man who said, this is the Messiah. 100 years before, they rejected Christ, but they finally felt they had found their Messiah. And in 132 AD, the Jews revolted, led by Simon Bar Kochiba. Kochiba is probably how it's pronounced. They believed he was the Messiah, and he was going to lead Israel into a new kingdom. He was going to save the nation. But nonetheless, he revolted, and this time around, when Emperor Hadrian, who was the ruling emperor at the time, rallied against them, he destroyed the nation of Judah. Millions died. He killed entire towns, villages, countrysides. Hundreds of thousands of people fell in single battles. Others were expelled from the Holy Land. They were sold into slavery. They were carried out. Many other millions, they think, died of starvation at that time, hiding in the undergrounds because the Romans had determined there was no mercy this time. They had shown mercy enough to the Jewish people. Hadrian forbid many, all things, all aspects of worship of the Jewish religion. He forbade circumcision, observance of the Sabbath, the holy days. You could not teach the Torah in a public place or you would be thrown into jail or killed, tortured and killed. All Jews were expelled from Jerusalem. The city of Jerusalem was emptied of its Jewish people. And that was one of the many things that started the end of the presence of Jewish people in Israel at that time. Well, you look at the nation, you look at the city of Jerusalem, what is left of it? We look at this here over the Temple of the Dome, the Muslim sanctuary or temple that's there right now, and the foundation that's underneath it. You look a little bit closer, and yes, the famous Wailing Wall, the foundational wall of Herod's temple, the only thing that's left of that particular temple. And of course, we're familiar with the temple and that the Wailing Wall is still there. Well, Hadrian started that tradition that the Jews were allowed to enter Jerusalem once per year so they could go in and look and lament their loss and see what they had lost. Hadrian's acts against the Jews were extremely strong. So why Rome? Why did Rome start it? Well, Hadrian's legislation made it extremely uncomfortable, especially for anyone in the Roman capital, to ever consider keeping the Sabbath day. The punishment was severe, and the pressure would have been huge. Emperor Hadrian, in summary, enacted a most repressing anti-Jewish and anti-Sabbath legislation in AD 135 after the war with Judah. Also, the day of the sun was advanced from the second day of the week to the position of the first and perhaps most important day of the week. At that time, the Romans believed, they had gone to a seven-day cycle, and the Romans believed that the god of Saturninus, was the supreme god. He was the number one god. So Saturday was the first day of the week. The god of the sun was, the Solaris god, was the second most important god. But that changed at the same time around Hadrian, where he moved the calendar day, so the first day was now on the day of the sun. Well, we got to look at ourselves and say, well, how would I react in that kind of environment? Facing certain death if I was caught observing the Sabbath. If I preached the Sabbath, I was in certain trouble. Well, many Christians changed the time and manner of observance of two Jewish institutions to make themselves unique, the Sabbath and the Passover. And we see now, around 135 AD, an extreme pressure to start to change. Well, why Rome? The sixth reason, again, Christian contempt for the Jews. Well, there's a whole body of literature again, the Adversus Judaeus, Against All Jews, pardon my Latin, literature appeared in the Roman times, especially in Rome itself. There was a very strong movement against the Jews, and the Christians were right behind it. The Roman Christians had effectively lost their Hebraic roots. They lost it for many reasons, you know, the legislation as much as one big reason, but they had lost their Hebraic roots. They had lost their love of the Torah. So how did Rome promote this? Okay, there's lots of good reasons as to why it started in Rome. How did Rome actually promote this? Well, the first way is theologically. They produced a theology that said, here is why we keep a new celebration on Sunday. You know, old covenant, new covenant. You know, how many times have we heard this particular theological theory that the Sabbath was old covenant and Sunday is new covenant, it's a new creation. You know, the dispensational theology, trying to get rid of all that background and disposing of the many of the things that God taught in his Torah. Socially, the second aspect, the way that Rome promoted this. Socially, the Sabbath was promoted as a day of fasting. Well, if you're a good Christian, the Roman church said, well, we should fast and humble ourselves on the Sabbath day. It's no longer a day of feasting and joy. There are many anti-Jewish teachings, you know, very outright, bald anti-Semitism written by the Christian community that we have today in Christian literature. And the third way that Rome promoted this was liturgically. There was no assemblies at all, and that's how they practiced their religion. There was no assemblies at all on Saturday. Never any kind of religious activity, a baptism, a marriage, or anything, you know, any kind of sacrifice or offering or anything like that. Never was it on a Saturday. Same for the holy days. Rome contrasted her practices against Sabbath-keeping Constantinople. At the time, you know, the church wasn't one big unified body, of course. It was not a world that, you know, had the internet to send information around. But Constantinople still kept Sabbath. They still kept the Sabbath and the holy days. Some of the Eastern churches still did. And many of the Rome writers contrasted themselves to say, hey, look at us, we're good. We keep the new creation Sunday. But those, you know, people stuck in the old covenant or all those different words you want to use over in Constantinople, they did not. And that was in AD, you know, 440 AD, you know, long after many other things had gone through. Okay, so if Saturday is the Sabbath is out, why Sunday? Okay, we've written off, you know, Saturday as the Sabbath. Why Sunday? You know, of all the days, why not Wednesday? Why not Tuesday? Why not Thursday? Well, we say Sunday primarily because an emperor in 321, going back to Rome again, the Emperor Constantine, he made observance of the venerable Day of the Sun a civil holiday. Big reason why he made that a civil holiday is both Christians and pagans observed this particular day. So why Sunday? It was already being observed by the pagans and by many Christians in Rome. So it was a popular thing, so why not? Of course, we know Constantine eventually, his so-called conversion to Christianity later in his life. So that was pushed again from Rome. Why else on Sunday? There's direct evidence as to why it happened on Sunday, or why Sunday was chosen as the day. And Jerome, again, another one of the church fathers, you know, as the Catholic Church calls them, a famous historian and writer of the ancient church, Jerome said that we willingly acknowledge the day of the sun as the light of the world appeared, and on this day the sun of justice has risen. They're very outright in saying it. We have no problem saying why we switched to Sunday. There's also archaeological evidence, much evidence coming out of Rome, that the church itself, again, this there's a slightly sideways picture, but this is out of St. Peter's Basilica, raised around 240 AD, they believe this particular mosaic was made, and there were several mosaics. They're very pointedly comparing Christ to the sun god. They're making Christ to look like the incarnation of the sun god. And the mosaics there, again, this is in Rome, 240 AD, very strong evidence that they were mixing at that time Christianity and the worship of the sun. The pagan religions were being mixed with Christianity. Another big reason why Sunday was chosen in that it was already being observed. It's very convenient. And so this is how a holy day became a holiday. Again, today my intent was not to go into all the reasons as to why we keep the Sabbath and the scriptural justification, but this one particular element, how did it move from Sunday to Saturday? And again, as I mentioned before, a lot of the credits for this, a lot of the study and research comes from the book From Sabbath to Sunday. This is, again, Dr. Samuel Bakayoki's book. Many of us has already read, but again, it's a kind of thing where I know someone a few weeks ago asked me some questions, and I was trying to dredge up from the memory, why was that? How did that exactly happen? It's always certainly good to go back. Now, I think many of us do have copies of that, and I believe there's a copy in the library. I brought my own as well. It's a very technical, very detailed, and I've just kind of skipped along the top waves of the discussion or of the text. But if you want to get into a lot of detail, it's a great book to study and to read and really understand so that we're rock solid in our knowledge and understanding as to why we keep the Sabbath and to why we keep it on Saturday and how it was moved to Sunday and all the different reasons why we disagree with that theologically. So again, we're back to the sunset. We started, we're ending. And hopefully today we have a better appreciation of how the Sabbath was moved to Sunday.